This is the School Success Podcast, a podcast for school leaders to learn from other school leaders what's working and what's not, and to get inspiration and encouragement, as well as strategies to grow school enrollment, connect with families, retain teachers, recruit teachers, and everything in between. You guys are heroes, and I cannot thank you enough for pouring into this next generation that's coming behind us. My goal is you will take at least one thing away from every episode that you can take back to your school to make it better than it is right now. Please enjoy the School Success Podcast. Hey, school success makers, welcome to another edition of the School Success Podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell Slater. I'm joined by a new friend up north, up in the great country of Canada, Simon Jeans, who is the executive director of Christian School Management, doing some amazing things to help schools out. And as him and I were talking, I was like, this guy's got to be on the podcast because he adds so much value to schools. And we're going to dive into all of those things today on today's episode that you guys can take back to your schools to make it better than it is right now. But before we dive into all of that, we do want to highlight our amazing sponsors over at America's Christian Credit Union. This year, they're celebrating 65 years of service, and they provide essential school banking services and a tuition financing program for schools looking to reduce their risk and administrative burden. So if you're a Christian school who is collecting tuition payments, and maybe at the end of the year, you've only collected 95% or 98% of the total tuition that is owed to you, of course, you're missing out on revenue as a school. And that just puts you in a really not so fun situation. So what you can do is get with America's Christian Credit Union, and your families can get a tuition financing loan from them. And then you as a school get all the money up front, and then they pay it off just like they would a car payment, but they're paying the credit union directly. And it doesn't cost you as a school anything to do that. So I want you to go check out all their services that they offer and provide to schools. And you can check it all out on their website, americaschristiancu.com/schools. That's americaschristiancu.com/schools. All right. Well, as we jump into today's episode, I'm going to pass it off to Simon to introduce himself, and then we'll dive on in. So Simon, welcome to the podcast today, sir.
Thanks so much. It's fantastic to be here. And while I live in Canada, I've lived in the States for 14 years. I'm a dual citizen. I have four children. One of them was born in the States. So I have both feet in both countries. It's a lot of fun. It really is. The cultural differences, the different ways of saying words. And I grew up in England, so my accent is a complete mess, but it's been a lot of fun experiencing all the different ways in which people live and think and have their being, so to speak. Thank you for having me on the show.
Love it. Well, I start with the same question, and I want to start with you. If I was to come visit you over there in Canada where you're at, what would you say you have to do this to experience the full area that you're at? Maybe it's Canada in general or your specific province or city, but like, what is like, Mitchell, you got to do this and you got to eat this. Is there something specific I'd have to do to experience it all?
So my benefit is that I live in Canada. I live in Southwestern Ontario. In fact, I'm south of 22 American states, which is always blows people's minds, but it's true. It's true. I'm in about the south as you can get in Canada, but I work almost exclusively in the States. And the issues that Christian schools in the States, Christian schools in Canada, seem very, very similar. They seem very, very similar. And CSM itself began not because we wanted a new business or I needed a new job or anything like that. It was very simple that Christian schools around us kept going out of business. And so if you're somebody listening to this podcast or watching this podcast, you know that's true because you've watched that happen in your neighborhood. You've seen schools in your part of the country go out of business. In some places, it seems more than others, maybe the Northeast or other places that are called more secular than others. But in my experience, every place in the U.S., every place is pretty secular. And the idea that because you're a Christian school, therefore you're given some kind of divine right to exist, obviously is not true. We've closed literally thousands of Christian schools in the 21st century. And so Christian School Management came into being very simply to say this: have hope. You have to start somewhere. And the place that we always start, because we're Christians, is that we're a resurrection people. And so our job is to hope and then to ask the right questions. So first of all, it's, are we a resurrection people Well, do we believe that we're destined to fail? Do we believe that we're actually destined to succeed? That doesn't mean that you have a right to succeed or anything like that, but God more often than not wants prosperity for us. That doesn't mean that we are guaranteed prosperity. Indeed, there are many places in the world where to be a Christian and to be a Christian educator is dangerous. And that's not so for us. And yet, our prosperity is not guaranteed. And the way in which we approach our vocation as Christian educators is crucial, is absolutely crucial. We are not destined to close down. I just don't believe that. My colleagues at CSM, there are 12 consultants at CSM right now, none of us believes that we were destined to close down. We were destined to bring the life of Christ into the life of every child in the United States. And that's what we want to do.
Love it. Man, I love what you guys are doing and love that you're able to run it from Canada with all the schools being in the United States that you work with at the moment. But of course, I know if ones in Canada needed your services, you guys could help them as well. Just make sure I don't forget about it. What's the best place I should go to eat real quick? And if I go to Canada, you say, hey, you got to eat this food or you got to visit this thing to experience Canada. What would you say I got to do?
Oh, traditionally, you would have to go to Quebec and eat poutine. Real okay. Poutine, not make-believe poutine.
Okay, I love poutine, but I'm sure I've never had the legit real poutine, but I love poutine. So I'm thinking yours will be even better. So that is one of my favorite things
to
eat.
Yeah, it's all about the kind of cheese curds, right? It's all about the kind of cheese curds.
I love gravy. So, yeah. All right, good deal. Well, you've been working with schools for a long time. I would love to just dive into some of the main questions we talked about at the beginning. So what are some of the challenges you continue to see pop up in the schools you've worked with and continually worked with? What are these ones that you keep seeing pop up that schools are fighting with, and how should they combat these? How have you helped your schools combat some of these challenges?
Yeah, that's awesome, Mitchell. So let's start here. Schools, by and large, there are church schools that are run by the elders or some kind of church council, or the diocese if they're Catholic schools. But most schools are run through a board of trustees. And the number one most difficult decision the board of trustees makes every year is, what should we charge for tuition? And here's the interesting thing. We have never, ever seen a school go out of business because you charge too much tuition. But we have seen tens and hundreds of schools go out of business because they didn't charge enough. So what's the difference between not charging enough and charging too much? Well, if you charge too much, the theory is that you're not affordable. And you go, oh yeah, you want to be affordable, right? And then you say, well, what does a cheap Christian school cost? So I was looking at one today. New schools just opened up in Minnesota, classical Christian school, is charging $6,000. Well, you tell me how that's affordable to somebody living on minimum wage. It's not, is it? It's absurd. Or you tell me that that's affordable to even somebody making $40,000, maybe even $50,000 a year after tax. It doesn't make sense. It's not, tuition isn't affordable. That's just wrong-headed. What we want to be able to do is to be able to ask people who can't afford it to pay what it costs and to provide support to those who cannot afford it. And there are many, 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 many Christian families who would love to send their kids to a Christian school. And there are lots of states in the United States now, like Florida, like Iowa with their new STO, like Pennsylvania, that have great programs that enable the school to essentially take state money in order to help their families attend. So that's fantastic. But even with that, you still have to have tuition. Why? Well, it's very simple. You want to pay your teachers. So the number one most difficult question a board faces every year, without a shadow of a doubt, is what should tuition be next year? And the answer is equally simple. Enough so that you can pay your teachers well, maintain a safe building, safe learning environment, and ensure that your teachers have excellent opportunities to provide their kids. Because at the bottom of every school is the child. At the bottom, in the hierarchy, here's the board, here's the head, here's the teachers, and then here are the kids at the bottom. But let's reverse that. Let's turn that around and say, well, what's the point of the school? The point of the school is not the church or the board or the head or the teachers. The point of the school are the children. Just put them at the top and say, what tuition should we afford? Tuition that gets those children the best possible teachers and gets those teachers the best possible resources in order to teach those children in a safe learning environment. It doesn't seem that hard, does it? But we problematize it every year, and we make terrible, terrible, terrible decisions that require our teachers to live in, some of them, in poverty, literally in poverty. I go to schools in the United States where they can and do actually get food stamps. That's a blasphemy. That is appalling. That is not moral at all in any Christian sense of the word. So tuition, there's your number one question. Here's the second most difficult question. And it's the relationship between the principal or the head of school and that governing body, the board of trustees or the church council, if that's the organization. And that has to be rock solid. So if that relationship between the principal and the board is not rock solid, then the school founders. So those are the two basic reasons that schools fail. They don't charge enough, and they don't have a great relationship between the head of school and the board.
Cool. So I want to dive into these. I love that you shared both of these, because they're both obviously hot topics. And so let's talk about the first one. So the schools that are listening that are going, man, that's hitting home with me. It's resonating. What would you say is the best way for them to start, like going working backwards with it? Do they go, we want to pay our teachers X amount, so we take that, multiply it times all the staff, here's all the expenses, like work their way back to go, we need to be making $5 million a year, $2 million a year or whatever to be good, and then divide it by the number of students that they have open seats for? Is that the best, like, is there a simple little solution that you would suggest for those that are listening to follow?
Mitchell, that's great. Maybe you should become a consultant with us. That would be awesome. I can imagine you in a school. Yeah. So create a plan. You got to start somewhere. Where are you today? Where do you want to be 5 years from now? Divide that by five. It's not complicated. That doesn't mean it's easy. I'm not trying to give the impression that there are simplistic solutions, but there are simple solutions. And as we know from Jesus, simple is profound, absolutely profound. You know, what do I need to do in order to be saved? Well, do two things: love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And then Jesus said this: on these two things hang all the law and the prophets. Wow, the whole of the Torah, all of the major and minor prophets, just these two things. That's simplicity. That's not simplistic, which is failing to understand the complexity of a situation. But it is simple. It's getting to the nub of it. And so with tuition, we just need to get to the nub of it. Right now, I'm paying my teachers $45,000 a year. It's not what I could get if I was a teacher in the public school system, or maybe at a Christian school that was better funded, or with my Master of Science in industry. And so what does that mean? Well, it means that if I'm ambitious and I really want to go somewhere, I want to work at your school, but you know, I'm sorry, if I can make $20,000 somewhere else, I owe it to my family to do that, if I feel I can still live out my vacation. So to work at your school, and for you as a school to attract the best teachers, and keep the best teachers. And if you're on this podcast and you're an administrator, you know that it's not easy to get good teachers. It's easy to get bodies to fill the rooms up, but to get really, really good teachers and then to keep them, mm-hmm. that's really difficult. So if I want to move from $45,000, let's say to $58,000, I just say, okay, over 5 years, what do I think I can achieve? And create a plan that steps that out. It's about taking the first step. You know, the Chinese say you can walk 10,000 miles one step at a time, one step at a time. Okay. So you have to take the first step. And the first step is to say, tuition is just a calculation. It is not a moral statement. It is just a calculation.
And I've heard now people the schools that we've talked to were different strategies that they've put in place, where there's some that the one model I heard, and I'm going to have a horrible, I'm going to do a horrible job explaining it probably, but they talked about how they charge like a ton for tuition, but that 90% of the school qualifies for some form of financial aid. So like the people who are really well off, really wealthy, can will pay the top thing, but then hey, you, if you apply for it, everybody will get a piece of like some type of financial aid, to where there's people at the bottom who are getting in for free because there's enough coming in from the higher tiers to help cover it off. Is there a method that you suggest to clients to where, hey, you need to be compensating for this much at the top so that you can help the ones that can't afford the tuition at this level? Is there a way to factor that in?
Well, what you said is essentially what happens. In my experience, I've been doing this now since 2003. So between myself and my colleagues, we've probably gone into, I'm going to say, close to 1,000 schools now. I would guesstimate that between 25 and 45% of our families get some form of financial aid. And most of it, not all of it, some of it is definitely socioeconomic, as in I just don't make enough even to afford one child at your school. But much of it is because I have three children. And so I can afford the first one, but I want all of my children to benefit from this education. And so can you help me with the second one? And can you help me a little bit more with the third one? And the answer is absolutely.
Okay. Love it. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you talking on that one for a little bit. Talking about the relationship between, you said, just make sure I'm following, the head of the school and just the board of directors, or also the whole staff of the school?
No, it's literally with the board of directors or the board of trustees, whatever you call them. And it's each party understanding their role. It's each party understanding their role. So the board has to understand that its role is strategic. Its constituency, it's really interesting. Like who does the board work for? If it's a typical 501c3 in the States or a charity in Canada, it's a self-sustaining board. It votes itself in. It looks after the mission. It decides who the head of school is going to be or the principal. And how does that work? Like who does it work for? And CSM's answer is that it works for the next generation of children. So the principals, or the head of school's constituency, is this generation of children, the children who are actually at the school. So to put that into technical language, their job is operations. Who are the teachers? What are they teaching? How well are they teaching? Where are the classrooms? Do we have all the furniture that we need? Is the school safe? Do we have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Is it cleaned at night? That's all operations. That's all the job of the principal or the head of school. The board's responsibility is to say, oh yeah, that's great, but when you drop a pebble in a pond, the ripples have wide ramifications. And so our job is to drop the pebble in the pond and anticipate what's going to happen 5, 10, 15 years ago. I'll give you an example. We just published an article on the board's property acquisition plan. The board's property acquisition plan. So think about that. I'm in a school, we've got 7 acres, we got a nice building, and we're expanding. COVID, culture, there are different things, but families are looking for alternatives. And ours is one of them. But I don't have enough space. And I think, wow, you know, it'd be great to have enough space. Well, the board 25 years ago should have put in place a property acquisition plan that said, over time, this is where we think we're going to be going, and therefore. So let me give you two examples of it. One is my favorite. A group of nuns back in the 1870s and 80s wanted to start a girls' school outside Boston. And so they looked around and they bought this estate, this magnificent mansion at the top of the hill, beautiful gate that you went through into this manicured driveway. Absolutely fantastic. Well, that is foresight, because 120, 140 years later in 2023, that is now part of Boston. Mm-hmm. But there's 100 acres there. of gorgeous, gorgeous countryside that those kids can be embraced in, sort of their own little Garden of Eden. That's foresight, to really think through what it takes to have something that sustains itself over time. Second example, this one I really love, was a board of a Christian school about 25 years ago that decided that it wanted to expand its footprint and make sure that it didn't have any problems with its neighbors because of the athletic lights and because of after school activities and because of traffic and blah, 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 blah. So over 25 years, they bought two rows of houses just to knock them down and create a buffer for their neighborhood. Of course, they were going to do something with the space, but, and when I was there a couple of years back, there was one house left. One house lived in by this elderly woman, probably in her, I'm going to say she was about 76 or 77. And it was in her will that when she died, the school got the house. But it was only in her will for the last 3 years before I was visiting the school. The school had been working on her for 22 years and working with her children, because it's a family decision, right? And it was finally decided, and the school was going to be able to. That is foresight. That is being able to think for the next generation of students. Of course, there's lots of things the board has to do with foresight, but that's a really concrete example.
Hey, School Success Makers, just a really quick break to highlight one of our amazing sponsors, and that is ClassReach. Now, ClassReach supports schools of all sizes from application to graduation. Take charge of your school with ease, power, and mobility using ClassReach, the school management software administrators and teachers love using. You can get your free demo at classreach.com. That's classreach.com. They are amazing people, and they provide this amazing SIS software for you to keep track of your students' grades, communicating with families that are enrolled, and a whole bunch more. So again, check it all out on their website, classreach.com. They are awesome. All right, now back to the show. And is that something that you see the schools are, they miss? So like a head of school is, there's not a good collaboration between them and the board, or the board comes in and just doesn't have a clear direction or training to know like what their role should be or truly is. And then it's just kind of like, it's messy because they just don't know what they're supposed to do. Is that what you're seeing a lot of times when you're working with schools?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. They're not, just not quite sure what their role is. And so because most of them are current parents, like most of them have children at the school. That's why they're so motivated to sit on the board. Consequently, they're really interested in what's going on a daily basis. And if they bring that orientation into the boardroom, the outcome is disaster, absolute disaster. And what they have to do is when they walk in the boardroom, they have to take their parent hat off and put their grandparent hat on. And sometimes they even have to vote against their self-interest. You know, I'm not going to vote for this because we've all agreed that it's a bad idea, even though it would personally benefit my family. And board members that can't do that are toxic. And so it's about role. It's about understanding where your role is. And schools get into terrible, terrible trouble when boards who are not trained at all try to run their schools. Very, very bad idea, as you can imagine.
Yeah. So you recommend, this is kind of what I've heard from talking with more and more schools, really the head of school's job is to run the school. Board is there to be for advice and for like strategic things going forward. I guess in your quick terms, if you were to put it in quick words for those listening, what is your ideal situation for the head of school, principal, however you want to word that one, and the board, like their role, what it should be that you've seen work the best?
So this might be a practical thing that your viewers might find useful. The principal, the head of school's job is operations. It's current. It's today, today's children. A board's job is strategic, future generation, grandparent, great-grandparent. But the fact is that there are things that do overlap. And so what we say to boards is create board committees that have no power to deal with the things that overlap. So in the board meetings, you're not going to discuss the day-to-day. But let's take an obvious example. In the finance committee, you can talk about cash flow and it's okay. Because the board does have an interest in, okay, in May, can we actually pay our bills? You know, when there's no more money coming in until next year, that's a legitimate interest. enrollment. What's enrollment like next year? Well, that's a legitimate interest, but it's not strategic. It's this year. That's why you hired your principal, your head of school. But how do we talk about those things in a safe place? We say create board committees. That's where the board, the board, and the operations, the head of school with his staff and other volunteers in the community. It's another way to embrace a lot more volunteers in your community. That's a place that they can come together. Example of that, I just finished, actually several of us at CSM have just finished working with a number of schools to help them run their annual fund. So this is, you know, how do you raise money outside of tuition? Because tuition can never pay for everything. And in the annual fund, it's an interesting thing because fundraising is very strategic because it's how we get buildings in the future. It's how we buy land in the future. It's how we, you know, replace the roof, get the HVAC system done. It's fundraising is a way in which we really support those kinds of things. So it's strategic. But we also have an operations thing going along where we want our donors to feel today that they're valued and treasured and that looked after and not treated like a checkbook. And so the annual fund is a great place where the board and the operations overlap and you have this annual fund committee. Yeah, sometimes we call it philanthropy committee, development committee. There's all kinds of different ways of slicing the cake. But we have an annual fund committee and its job is to run the annual fund. The school cannot afford enough people to run something that's so labor intensive. The board, on the other hand, doesn't want to come into the school and run it. And so they create this committee where the two things overlap and they can run the annual fund in complete amity. The board gets its objective, the school gets its objective, and the governance structure remains solid.
I like it. All right. Well, I think we did really good on the challenges one now. So let's hear about what's going good. Any quick things to share on the wins thing of like schools you've worked with that are doing some really cool, maybe out of the box things that you can share that those listening be like, I would love to try and do that at my school.
So here's something that we think is really important into the future. And we've been working with two very, very fine schools, Legacy Christian Academy in Minnesota and Des Moines Christian School in Iowa. And I want to say immediately to those people who rush to their websites, dmcs.org and .org, and go, oh, yeah, well, you know, they're big schools, there are hundreds of kids and fancy buildings and all the rest. I want to say to you, a decade and a half ago, that wasn't true. That they were schools that were struggling. They were schools that had the potential to go in the wrong direction and maybe, even fail. And then something happened, and it's complex as to what happened, but something that they're doing, which is really exciting today, is that they're identifying that to be a great school, an excellent school. And Mitchell, you and I know, and indeed our watchers know, that the word excellent is way overused. When scripture says, seek those things which are excellent, that's great, but there's an enormous cost to that. There's a gigantic cost to that. Paul was a tent maker, but he was a tent maker first. He was trained as a tent maker so he could ply his trade the rest of his life. But after his great moment on the road to Damascus, he was an evangelist. He wasn't a whole bunch of different things. He was one thing. And he could only be one thing. When Jesus came, his mission was single-minded. To do something excellently, there's an enormous cost to that. And so when we think about excellent teachers, to have excellent teachers, what we know is that our schools, and the research backs this up, CSM, Christian School Management, is always going back to what does scripture say, what does the research say, and does experience bear that out? And where the three things mesh, we know we've got something that's totally airtight. And really good teachers can command their own price in the marketplace, almost literally. And so these two schools, because they desire excellence, and because they desire excellence on behalf of children, not as an abstract, but in order to benefit children, have decided that the old way of paying them, which was, are you alive? And do you have a piece of paper that says BA on it? It doesn't really seem adequate to the challenges of the 21st century. So the way that teachers are typically paid is that if I have 5 years of teaching experience, I'm somewhere there on the grid on line five. And if I have a BA, I'm on this column. And so I've got years of experience and then my years of education. And if I'm lucky in a Christian school, though many Christian schools don't even have this, if I get a master's degree or if I have so many CEUs, credits of continuing education, then I get a little bump as well. So my years plus that. But there's no connection, there's no correlation in the research between that and whether anything happens in the life of a child at all. I'm sure you can think back to your experience as a child, to teachers who probably shouldn't have been in the classroom. They had years of experience and they had degrees, but they were not good teachers. They should never have been in front of children or with children. And so what drives excellence in teaching? And the answer seems to be an implacable commitment to growing, which parallels, interestingly, what we want children to do. What do we want children to do? Every day, by definition, they're in a school, they're coming across something new that they have to learn. And they want to, because they're created imago Dei, and consequently, they're learning machines. They have to learn. Whenever we have problems in schools, this is always an interesting thing. Whenever we have problems in schools with kids, they say, well, they're not learning. And I go, well, they're not learning what you want them to learn, but they're definitely learning. You can't stop a child from learning. So what we want is for teachers to come alongside as teachers, directors, as guides, as mentors, as coaches, who are astonishing people. And so what these two schools are doing is going to a whole new system of thinking about the way in which we reward teacher excellence. Instead of aligning it with, are you alive for another year and do you have a piece of paper, they're aligning it with measures of student outcomes and something that we think of as the portrait of the child. So what does the child, what do we want the child to look like? And in what senses are you driving that outcome? Not test scores. We don't want to go down the public school route. That has failed. We've tried it in a whole bunch of different public school districts. We can't go down that route, but we can think about the way in which children develop and the impact that teachers have. And we know that outside of parents, the teacher is the number one influence in the life of a child. So their excellence matters, and these two schools are doing something really radical and remarkable.
I love it. Well, I love that you've helped them get to that point. I love that they're growing, and I thank you for sharing some of the wins that they've been having. I think the best way to wrap up this episode is one final question for you there, Simon. So one piece, if you could do one, if you had one piece of advice to share with the school leaders listening, what would that one piece of advice be?
That's actually sort of easy. I would want every school to have a theology of prosperity, not a theology of lack. And you see a theology of poverty. You see the theology of poverty in schools where teachers make do. You know, I know the school is short of money, so I'll make do. Or even out of my own salary, which isn't that much to begin with, I'll pay for something myself rather than burden the school. That sort of, we can't afford to landscape the school beautifully because we just don't have the money. Or we can't afford to replace the roof because it just isn't the money. And that theology of poverty that says that somehow our God is a God of negative. And Psalm 23 tells us, no, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall lack nothing. He leads me beside still waters. He leads me along green pastures. He restores my soul. He fills my cup to overflowing. Goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. That's what we want our schools to have as an attitude.
That's awesome. And I hope that they all do. That's awesome, Simon. Thank you for taking time out of your day to be on the podcast. I love your insight. I love the challenges you shared. I think the tuition structure there is going to be super helpful for our listeners. So I'm hoping that, as always, they're able to take one of these back to their school, make it better. So thank you for making me better today and for taking time out of your day to be on here. And I hope to continue our friendship and wish you nothing but the best as you continue to grow in your company as well, Simon.
I've so appreciated being with you. Thank you so much.
Well, another huge shout out and a thank you to Simon for taking time and being on the podcast today. I love what he's doing to help Christian schools. And I'm hoping, as always, at least one thing from today's episode is something that you can take back to your school and make it better than it is right now. And maybe it's the tuition side, maybe it's the board governance side, something. But there's a lot of really good nuggets from this episode. So please take them, use them, make your school better, make yourself better. Always. Now, we have some great resources for you guys as school leaders, so please make sure to check them out. One of them is our Facebook group, private Facebook group just for school leaders called School Success Makers. I'm personally in there. I'd love to see you in there as well. So go over there and join the School Success Makers private Facebook group. And then also on our website, schoolsuccessmakers.com. In the top right corner, we currently have a button there to get the School Success Report. It goes out weekly with different articles. It's going to have giveaways. It's going to have highlights and shout outs to different teachers in the communities and all around in our community of school success makers, because that's what you guys are. So make sure you subscribe to that top right corner of schoolsuccessmakers.com. Other great resources on our website as well. But we want to hear from you guys. So if there's any comments, suggestions, ideas that we can do to make our podcast better, as well as different guests you'd love to hear and have on, please let us know that. You can submit a form through our website and let us know those. And if you're loving the content that we're putting out, if you're listening to this still right now, please give us a 5-star rate and review. And if you want, tag us on social media. You can tag my personal page, Mitchell R. Slater, on Instagram or Facebook. We'd love to get some shout outs and some tags and reshare you guys back. So all that helps our community grow and helps get these episodes into the hands of more educators to help make them better, which is what we're after. So if you guys have anything to add, please let us know. But we'll be back here next week with another amazing guest, as usual, on the School Success Podcast. We'll see you then.